Okay, I just want to say welcome to everybody, and especially to you, John.
Thank you.
And it's because of you, Monica, that we had the opportunity to meet you. So I think I just stay there and you take over.
Should we take over?
Yes.
So it seems you have met some of the people here, John.
Uh-huh.
So, but for those of us who haven't met you, could you start by just introducing yourself a bit? Who are you and why are you in that chair?
Well, not sure why I'm in this chair. So I'm John Brendler. I met Monica in 1984, was it?
85.
Mm-hmm. When she came for six-week training, mm-hmm. intensive training in family therapy at the Philadelphia Child Guidance Clinic, where I was one of the people responsible for a lot of the training. And she said, I think you should come to, at the end of it, she said, I think you should come to Sweden. And I said, okay, that sounds interesting. I'm interested, you know, I was always been, I've always been interested in travel. My wife and I met in graduate school in Paris at the Sorbonne in 1969. So the idea of traveling abroad was exciting to me, and she created a week of training, and it took. It continued for 25 years, twice a year. So I've been married for close to 49 years, and we have three children and seven grandchildren. Two of our children are psychotherapists in DC and Manhattan, and one is a certified yoga instructor in north of Boston. I have a private practice for a long time now, and I have a holistic healing center in near where we live outside of Philadelphia. It's called buildingbridgesmedia.com. If you're interested, you can look it up. And the website, what's unusual about it is that it's a collection of about 35, 37 healing-minded people, mainly psychotherapists, some massage therapists from my influence in Stockholm, so an acupuncturist, and everybody has a private practice, a part-time practice or a full-time practice. The interesting thing about it is that we created it along the model of the hospital in Philadelphia that I directed, where the focus is on collaboration among the professionals while people have their own practices. But there's a tremendous spirit of collaboration and how people can work in a complementary way with each other given their special interests and skills. So people come for private practice, but they're not in a room throughout the week by themselves. There's a lot of involvement together.
Okay. So we'll get back to more about your work later. Just want to know, how would you describe her? Who's that?
I think Monica, I love Monica.
Yeah.
Okay. She is a thoughtful, determined, disciplined, imaginative, passionate person with a deep sense of conviction and a real mind, a very clear, coherent mindset.
Wow.
Oriented toward relationships.
Okay. That's have you heard yourself being described like that before?
No, thank you.
So how would you describe yourself, and who are you, and how come you are here?
Well, I'm part of the network, that's why I'm here.
Morning.
And, I met John, like you said. 85 on this training. And I think what I saw in John that was very particular for me was the combination with doing very sharp therapy, family therapy, with the residential care that you were in. You were head of the residential care at that time, and the combination with sharp therapy sessions, or really working with the family therapy.
What was sharp therapy?
I would say, what's the English word? Well, I've just practiced English now with you for half an hour.
Yeah.
Very well, on the point.
On the point.
On the point. How would you say that in English? You know, when
focused.
Thank you.
Focused on
very focused. Focused on the issue.
The issue.
Okay. And I remember seeing you doing a job with a mom and two twin boys. That were living in a residential care in Philadelphia. And by that time I was working in residential care in Stockholm.
Okay.
So I was trying to understand how to combine the residential caretaking and seeing the parent, the children, in daily life, as well as doing the focused therapy sessions.
Mm.
And that's what you were head of. And I was very... I liked your way of working. I liked your way of focused working on therapy. I liked the caring as well for the family. So the combination of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I answered your question now.
That
was that was me at that time. That was 85, and I was very impressed by that. And that's why I asked you to come over, because we didn't have much of that. I don't think we have today either.
So, wait, could you say something more about that before we let John describe? What is it that you see that is a complement to what we already know back here in Sweden? There's something that you find in his work or in your work together?
Yeah, I think the focus. I think the focus by that time was far more strong and direct than I was used to seeing in Sweden.
Could you give an example? The difference?
I have an example.
You have an example.
From where I worked as Svalnes, and I think you said, your child is going to die. You were very direct in that, if you don't do anything in the family now, she's going to die, or he's going to die, I can't remember. He was, but he was very direct that you have so and so, you made it very clear that this is going to happen. You saw the progress of this child if this child continued behaving that way, and that was quite an unusual, very, very direct sort of approach.
Okay.
As one example, which I remember.
And I think also in the interaction between the people in the room that you were very direct. The example from the two boys and the mother was that you were in the interaction between them, and you were helping these were two 7-year-old boys, and 7-year-old boys, you know, it's hard to talk to, and in family therapy we don't often talk about family therapy with young children, but you were doing a job and actually getting the boys to straighten out their way of talking to mother. And I like that very much, to use different language, and the mother to be sensitive to them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, important. And that was the whole Philadelphia also working with that, I think, but you were doing it in residential care, so it was important for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so sharp therapy, focused, direct. So how would you describe, I know there's probably a whole story how come everything happened as it did, so I'm a bit interested in right now, how would you describe what you do today?
I think the families I see, the patients I see would describe me as being very loving, with people who are fighting for their lives. Nobody I see comes to therapy, whether it's a family, a couple, or an individual, but it's mainly families and couples or larger systems. Nobody comes without feeling the threat of some death. Okay. The anticipation of death, of loss, or of some profound trauma, some trauma. So I engage with people in the suffering of their lives in the moment. And I communicate to them, not just through words, but I communicate that I believe that they are more capable than they believe themselves to be. I communicate that they are responsible for helping their children grow and helping their relationships grow, and that institutions, and to miss the opportunity to work closely together is a potentially dangerous act. It's a potentially dangerous mindset to think that others can do better, whether it's other professionals or institutions. So the combination of feeling embraced and understood, I want to come back to that in a moment, the feeling of really being understood and accepted for who they are while being challenged to stretch and change is a powerful dynamic. It's very compelling. So my therapy is compelling, challenging, compelling, and loving.
What about embrace? What do you mean by that? How do you do that?
You know, a mother and father, let's say, or a mother with 2 7-year-olds becomes frustrated and throws up their hands and wants to leave and say, "You take it."
Okay.
Or, "I'm out of here." Or one starts arguing and raising their voice over another person, the other person withdraws, becomes invisible in the room, while another person is controlling and dictating. That's a beautiful opportunity for a therapist to come in and take over. And I say to them, "No. Listen to her. Your child's life depends on your listening to her so that she can feel appreciated and valued and share more of herself with you. And when the two of you are developing more engagement together and building more complementarity between the two of you, your child, your children will grow." So I block the exit and say to them, Don't leave. You can do better, and your children need you to do better." The other day, I said to this woman who says to me, a couple came in, "We've been fighting for 20 years. It's hopeless." And I said, "Tell me what you are struggling with your husband." And she talks, and there's something in her eyes that felt very tender. Do you understand my English?
Yeah.
Very tender. This is embracing.
Yeah.
So I say to her husband, who's looking at me while I'm looking at her, I said, "Did you see the tenderness in her eyes?" "No." I said, "I did. Look at her eyes. They are so tender and beautiful." And he looks warmly and says, "I didn't see that." She looks at him with softer eyes, more vulnerable. I said, "This is the beginning of something new happening. I take the details with all my senses. I use all my senses to focus on the details of people's communication. and engage them in looking differently in a new way to one another. That's embracing.
That's embracing. Could you say something more about what you're looking for?
Yeah. I'm looking, I'm looking for a new experience. I'm looking to cultivate, to infuse, to, may need some help with them, I'm looking to cultivate a new moment, a new look, a new sensitivity, a new expression. What? Look at her eyes looking at you. And as he looks at her eyes more tenderly, his eyes have to become tender.
That's beautiful.
And I say to him, that's beautiful. And I mean it. And I feel it in my body. And I say to her, you look softer. Where do you feel it? Oh, I just feel it. And I said, tell me, where in your body? I said, I feel the tenderness right here. Mm-hmm. I feel softer right here. Where do you feel it? Where do you feel it? Hold it for a moment. I don't use psychological jargon, clinical talk.
Okay.
Very, very basic, fundamental, human. Hold that look for a moment. Just hold the look for a moment. Now, if there are children in the room, this is the best gift. Mm. Right this moment, this is the best gift you can give your children. In 5 years, you will help your children with this. If you develop this pattern, different from the pattern of, I want out of here, arguing, different from that pattern, if you hold this pattern for 5 years, your children will have friends. They will be able to focus on schoolwork. They will feel quieter in their body. They won't need to go for ADD medication. They won't need Ritalin. If you can take this pattern and build it day in and day out, you understand my English okay?
Yeah. So can I ask you a question? Yeah,
sure.
So when you first said you're looking for a different experience, to something
to create a new,
that where some kind of little shift might
yes.
be possible. So what's the next step when you have when you introduce some kind of pattern?
And the next step, once it's introduced, is to for them to practice it more. Okay, now hold the look for 5 seconds, more than one.
Mm.
Hold the look for a minute. I will time you. So what, you know, part of my therapy is direct, and part of it is in this almost in the same moment, very playful. I have a very playful spirit, and people who have rich relationships have the mix of being able to engage in conflict and be able to play.
Okay, so let me just ask Monica. So you got a hold of this many years ago, and tell us something about how do you work with this? Is it the same way, or do you have a different approach, or how does this show up in your work?
I couldn't explain it as nice as you do in English as well, but I think, yes, I think I do very much that kind of job, and I think that's why I'm direct, I'm very sensitive, and I'm opening up those moments of meeting and moments of attachment in a way between the people in the room. And you also talk about the hierarchy, and I learned a lot in Philadelphia about that from the beginning. I was quite young when I did the training, so I've always used that, but added to work directly with the communication of feelings, and that's what you talk about, the eyes, the voice, the facial expressions, and sometimes the movements. And I have used that a lot, and I think that's why I work also with family therapy with young children, mm-hmm. because it's possible, it's very possible mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I like to work with the film technique as well, yeah. as an extra mm-hmm. way to help parents to see their mm-hmm. children, to yeah. see the children's faces, mm-hmm. the needs, mm-hmm. the sometimes the fear that yeah. the child has, and to help sitting next to the parent and to be able to open up and to meet that. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Mm. So over the years when you have been doing this work, has the method changed? Have you, if I would ask, is it some kind of basic principle you're working with, or what is the recipe of success in this? With a sense of humor, I said that. I hope you understand. What do you think is the work that make the magic happen in this work?
Well, I think it's a combination of having a very clear map, a very clear framework that has to fit the therapist in terms of a cognitive understanding of change. And a map that includes the fit, the alignment between the model and the values of the therapist and the convictions of the therapist. Style is not so, you know, that the style and personality come with the therapist.
Yeah.
You know, for me, therapy is an art. So it's really about when I'm supervising the therapist as a person, helping that therapist develop as fully as possible in relationship to relationships that they're working on changing, helping change. So part of it is the cognitive map, and part of it is how therapists use themselves, use their passion and imagination. The thing that's most lacking for me in my experience training therapists is the lack of imagination cultivated in the training. So, you know, what we are at our very best when we are freest to improvise. Yeah.
Can I say something? Because I think that was so important. When I did the training in Philadelphia, let me go back again to that. You were in the residential care, and then we had many, you had a supervisor in Minuchin, and you know, there were many really good therapists there. And to be placed in the group that I was going to be supervised in, you were sitting on stage and doing a role play therapy. So I was the therapist, and there was this family role play. And that was the first start for this training. I don't know if you remember. I remember very, very well when I was going up on this.
I think I remember as well as you do.
I had smallpoxes, and I was having 40 grader. I was really sick.
Oh.
And I had to do this. Otherwise, all the money had been gone. So I was doing this, and I was having this family. I don't remember much. I just remember trying to do the work. But I remember, and it's been so important for me, the feedback from all the group of supervisors, that was that it was a beautiful work because I was tracking, that was the word that was used, and I was able to go like, you know, the LP, the record, you know, all the way, just following and coming into the point, and not using all these methods or special techniques. I was just doing this and
the tracking.
I got really, because it's something what you are talking about. I think the engagement, of course, and the passion for the work, but also to follow your own. Who am I and what can I do?
Can you say something more about when you were following the? You mentioned like a record, getting closer to the center without using method.
Mm-hmm.
What did you use?
Curiosity. And passion. I'm still, that's all my work. Huh? I'm curious and passion. And I just love to get, and I'm always curious, I guess we all are, we're sitting down with the family, getting what's going on, and to find that out, you have to just move along, but to move along with senses and the communication of feelings.
I get the feeling just by listening to you, there's a lot of registering what happens in the room, a lot of sensitivity for what actually happens, not so much a strategy to follow, more being in kind of improvising like a musician.
It's following very closely what's happening with respect to one area of focus for me.
Okay.
So it's all my tracking, all my curiosity is oriented toward understanding what are the interactional patterns? What are the patterns of thought and behavior that are happening repeatedly that are affecting the child's development, the development of the parents, the development of the couple?
So could I be a bit curious? When you're talking like this, you mean actually right there on the spot, you look for patterns to challenge and to emphasize.
I look for patterns in the room, in the moment, based on the stories they tell me, connected with what I experience in the room, the coherence between the pattern of the story. So when your child didn't eat, what did you do? Well, I look for the pattern, the system that forms around the symptom. And I want to see it happen in the room. And I connect that to development. I think what's important about that is it becomes very meaningful and relevant to the people in the room, rather than just being with a therapist who's asking a lot of questions that are of interest to the therapist, that don't have immediate relevance. So it creates more of a gap, distance between the family and the therapist. The therapist is busy in their own head.
Yeah.
So when I say that pattern of the mother or the father leaving the room in frustration, and another parent leaving by closing in, where does that leave a child who's starving herself? That's going to encourage death, the likelihood of her getting sicker and sicker. Now, if they change that pattern, and I describe the pattern, that can help the child grow.
Are you actually talking about patterns with the family?
Oh, yeah. This is what I see. You know, what happens to you when you retreat, when you go inside? Where are you thinking about? Where do you go? What are you thinking about? Tell me where you go. Where do you go? What happens to you? So they feel understood at multiple levels, not criticized or corrected or judged. And there are not a lot of questions, because there's one fundamental framework.
Okay, so is there every way, every approach always finds challenges? So I'm interested in if you can find, is it families or situations where you find this approach difficult?
So there aren't families that I find difficult. There are moments, and there's an energy that I find difficult. When I meet a father who is determined to be right and very, very rigid and closed, that's most challenging for me. That's the most challenging moment.
How come you find that challenging?
Oh, well, I think it is certainly connected to the fact that I, when I was 16, my father suddenly died of cancer, suddenly to my mother and me. So I didn't have, I didn't grow into my late adolescence and young adult life with a biological father. I had other father figures like Mnuchin and Whitaker and Braulio Montalvo, and I had great father people who were like therapists for me, but they were supervisors. But okay, but he left. Mm. So I had the experience of loss and no coming back. So I think when I meet a father who is lost and stuck in a very, very rigid pattern of flight, my unconscious gets activated very quickly. Mm. Now, I love challenges, so I have a fairly developed connection with my unconscious. Mm. You know, somebody once said to me they thought I was trained by Melanie Klein. Mm. You know, like I have all my teachers were psychoanalysts.
Okay.
You know, Mnuchin, Whitaker, they trained in psychoanalysis. And then they became family therapists. So I had a very strong connection with those two people in particular. But anyway, that's something that's a moment where I get, come awake.
Yeah. Come awake. Yeah.
I wake up. Like, you and I are going to have an interesting conversation here, father and me. Yeah. And I get a lot of inspiration from that. But that's like, whoa.
So, thank you for sharing that. That was interesting. So the context of shifting countries, I was a bit curious about. You've been in the United States and learning this thing. Is it possible to just go to Sweden and do the same thing, or is it something that changes when you teach in US or you teach in Sweden? Is there a difference for the people who train to do this, or is it just works as well in US as in Sweden?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you both, actually.
Yes, I think so. I think to me it's been change in Sweden over the years in therapy. I think in the beginning when you came to Sweden, there were certain people that liked the approach of your direct work and your focused work and your engagement, I would say. But it didn't appeal to everybody. And I think over the years, I think family therapists at least have been more direct and more Americanized.
Americanized.
Maybe. I mean, it's a cultural difference. I've been doing my research also in US, so we've been studying families in how the way that parents act with the children and comparing Sweden and US.
You have?
Yes, okay. And there are certain differences.
Can you say something about
that? Well, the directness is one. Okay. The tempo is another.
How come?
And I think we're talking a little bit about both directness and tempo.
Okay.
And we see that the three-month-old babies already are pairing up the parents' tempo and directness.
Okay.
Mm. And the Swedish people are more smooth, slower, softer, and I think it goes all the way from babies to therapists. So I myself like very much to be in US and to work in US and to communicate with that way of talking so in teaching, and maybe it has changed, I would say. I don't know, you have the idea of how it was in the beginning maybe and how it was by the end, but there is cultural differences in families.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I worked in Philadelphia and then later in Cleveland, I was working as well at the child psychiatry. I mean, you had to work differently with the American families because they are more direct. It's a tougher way of communicating. And I had to be that as well.
Yeah.
So there was no... I had to practice.
Yeah, you had to
which
practice.
Which I then could use a lot in Sweden.
Yeah, okay. What would you say is the difference? If there is
I don't find a difference.
No?
Because, you know, I work with a framework that's a universal framework. And part of that framework is to have a sensitivity to the particular culture of the family and of the individuals in the family. That has to do with understanding their temperament, their pace, how they process. And that's different in every family and from family to family. So I don't have a framework that's connected to a particular culture. Part of it is, and I speak slowly in English. You know, I love language. I have an appreciation for the nuances of language in English and in other languages. So it doesn't really, for me, it doesn't change.
But John, I have a question then, because I think still you are presented as the American therapist.
Yeah.
So the family is knowing, because when I came to Philadelphia, and when I have been in other countries to teach, you are presented from the country you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And people are also changing a little bit.
Yeah.
And you are changing a little bit,
yeah.
Like you say, the nuances. So I think I would question it a little bit, that it's not really cultural, so that you try to fit in and maybe become a little bit slower.
Swedish.
Like you talked.
Yes,
bit I think
slower.
So. I've been seeing you working with families.
Yeah.
I've been hearing families after they work
so
with you.
So you could say that he kind of adopts a little
so.
Bit.
But
I think
so. That's necessary for a therapist to do with every family.
I know what you're talking
to
about.
To become you have to allow, I think it's necessary to allow oneself to detach from one's own position and be inducted by the culture while not losing yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by, yeah, so I become, look, with aggressive American families, if I'm working with a corporate businessman or lawyer, I'll become very soft and slow and difficult to understand. So they have to stretch to hear me, because I don't want it to be a symmetrical battle that escalates. So I'm looking for complementarity. So I imagine I'm slower than I might be with, but I don't think about it as a cultural thing.
No, I understand.
But I'm also in it, so I don't have the clearest perspective.
Of course.
Of myself.
Of course.
But
you
don't
change the way you work when you come and teach here. It's the same teaching. Maybe a part of the question is like, do you find Sweden, when you teach in Sweden?
Yes.
What do you see that's different from when you teach in the United States?
Well, one of the difference, you know, again, part of it is that when I was teaching in Sweden, I was part of a network that kept coming. So it wasn't meeting new people, only new people all the time. So I felt very much welcomed and at home. You know, I felt really honored in Sweden, and that is, I really attribute that a lot to how you set it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was an amazing first week of my life here in December of 1985. I find the Swedish, people in the seminars, you know, very thoughtful, very, very open. I've found them to be very open to my way of thinking.
Yeah.
Very curious. How do you make this happen? How does this actually work? How can you mix playfulness and challenge without people feeling threatened? People were I found them to be very interested.
Yeah.
Much more interested than, you know, a lot of American therapists go to seminars and they are not really that open to a new way of thinking or to learning.
Mm.
They're there to get certification credits or,
yeah.
I found the Swedish mindset very, Swedish people very curious.
So you've been to Sweden about 50
totally,
times.
I'm totally biased.
They can't say anything as a room full of Swedes.
Who isn't? But I'm openly acknowledging how biased I am.
I'm probably biased too, because I was thinking when you were talking that this directness, this focus, this sharpness is a bit unusual in the Swedish context. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering how the clients, if I understand when you do it that it works, but I kind of, how do we train to become more direct, sharp? This is also, as you said, a bit about who you genuinely are as a person. You can't pretend to be sharp.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So maybe we should. So should we create the question together?
Yeah. Let's try.
So, are you asking how do you cultivate a sense of focus and clarity in your work?
And confidence.
And confidence.
Yeah.
Because the sharpness that Monica refers to is not a harshness or a loud.
No.
It's clarity.
Precise.
Precise.
Yeah.
So part of that has to do with training. And this is where I had... you know, I thought that the Swedish training network could be more developed.
Okay.
When I was here during those years. That I think the heart of training psychotherapy lies in the relationship between the therapist and the supervisor. And the supervisor is really, in my mind, takes a position of mentoring the therapist's development. Like, I will take you under my wing,
yeah.
And my work is to help you develop as a therapist. Mm. You are not in this alone. Mm. If you are not developing, I take responsibility. Because I'm more experienced, I have more professional experience, life experience, you know, and I am committed to your development as a therapist. So you're not going to fail. You can't fail on your own because you're not in it alone.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm guiding you while I'm being guided by you.
Okay.
Because it's a relationship.
Mm.
And I have to work with your personality and your style. I have to learn what your strengths are, what you present as your strengths, and what your strengths are that you're not even aware of.
Mm. Yeah.
So that breeds confidence. Mm. If you have somebody working with you, like, you can't do wrong here.
Because at some point you have to leave the method and the techniques and go straight into being present in the room with the families.
With respect to a particular framework.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a very exciting, very close, very focused, clear contract.
And I think it's an interesting contract that you were in because you were the supervisor coming from abroad and the ones who choose to be therapists with you had chosen that and the families were chosen by the therapists. Mm. So it was a setup that was pretty safe and pretty, there was a confidence between all of us, I think.
Yeah, there was and I worked with, I was doing consultations.
Mm.
So I was really consulting to the therapist. Who was part of a community that knew me, trusted me.
Yeah, that's good.
So there was a sense of trust built.
Yeah,
and the leaders of the different clinics trusted me.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. So
and that was cultivated in part by Monica.
Yeah. I love the word cultivated.
Yes.
It's a beautiful word.
It's a beautiful word.
Yes.
But thank Voltaire.
Yeah, okay.
In Candide. Cultivating the garden. You know, cultivating is a great word. So the other interesting thing is American therapists are not particularly developed in an attention to language. They're professionally trained. They're not linguistically, culturally trained. That's a huge disadvantage.
Yes. Yeah. So I was going to stop for a minute. I just want to check out the time, because it's about 5.
We're time limited here?
Yeah, no, we're just going to take a little break. So I was thinking maybe now would be a good time. So let's listen to you guys, because it seems like the people are open. So should we take a stretch our legs and get something to drink and something, and then continue? And then, we were thinking, open up for questions.
Yeah, sure.
Is that okay?
And conversation, sure.
Conversation.
Yeah.